A new study from Michigan State University, published in the Journal of the Academy of Marketing Science, shows that leveraging consumer arrogance might be a marketer's most effective strategy for promoting their brands and products. Arrogance is when you broadcast your superiority to others. Consumer arrogance is broadcasting your superiority to others via consumption. Whether it's, I got a better deal on a product than you, or look at my new car, it's all about showing others how great a consumer you are and how much better you are than them. Companies spend billions of dollars advertising products, services, and experiences, but word of mouth, which is the information consumers share about products, deals, brands, or anything that is consumption-related, is an invaluable promotion tactic that is driven by consumer arrogance. Some experts predict that in 10 years, the conventional world of marketing will disappear and we will rely only on word-of-mouth marketing, especially for those of the younger generation who do not trust marketing messages from companies and rely on influencers, recommendations, and other forms of word-of-mouth communication. This is why the social phenomenon of consumer arrogance is critically important to understand. In an era of oversharing one's consumption practices and triumphs, the researchers wanted to find out what role consumer arrogance played in word-of-mouth sharing, for better or worse. In 5 studies, they showed how consumer arrogance drives word-of-mouth communication. Indeed, they confirmed that if you can trigger people's sense of consumer arrogance, they're more likely to engage in word-of-mouth communication. However, they still faced the question, is that always good for marketers? As frequently happens in marketing, the answer is, it depends. The study found that such a tendency can be a double-edged sword for marketers. While most consumers prefer to engage in positive word-of-mouth communication and talk about their consumption triumphs, the study found that consumer arrogance fuels both positive and negative word-of-mouth communication. Consumers brag about their consumption triumphs out of self-enhancement motives. Such triumphs portray them in a positive light as successful consumers to others. And if their sense of consumer arrogance is triggered, they will brag significantly more. However, triggering this sense of arrogance will also lead consumers to share negative information if they regard their consumption experience as a failure. In such cases, negative word-of-mouth communication will help them reaffirm their sense of superiority, especially if the failure occurred in the presence of others. The bragging culture in which we live rests upon consumer arrogance, showing others what you have that they don't, how you got it, or where you're doing it. And this culture is shifting how companies reach their consumer bases. The research emphasizes the uniqueness of consumer arrogance as a social phenomenon that drives word-of-mouth communication. The findings provide marketing managers with a strategic mechanism to add to their arsenal of managerial options for how to engage in the marketplace, particularly on social media. New research published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that smoking, divorce, and alcohol abuse have the highest correlation to death among the 57 social and behavioral factors analyzed. The study analyzed survey data collected from 13,611 adults in the U.S. between 1992 and 2008, and identified which factors applied to those who died between 2008 and 2014. It shows that a lifespan approach is needed to really understand health and mortality. For example, instead of just asking whether people are unemployed, they looked at their history of unemployment over 16 years. If they were unemployed at any time, was that a predictor of mortality? Rather than the more conventional approach used in prior studies, this one is more than just a one-time snapshot in people's lives, where something might be missed because it did not occur. This approach provides a look at potential long-term impacts through a lifespan lens. This is important because life expectancy in the U.S. has stagnated for 3 decades relative to other industrialized countries, raising questions about which factors might be contributing. This study intentionally focused on social, psychological, economic, and behavioral factors under the control of individuals or society, rather than biological factors beyond human control, like genetics. Of the 57 factors analyzed, the 10 most closely associated with death, in order of significance, were 1. Being a current smoker, 2. A history of divorce, 3. A history of alcohol abuse. 4. A history of recent financial difficulties. 5. A history of unemployment. 6. A previous history of being a smoker. 7. Lower life satisfaction. 8. Never being married. 9. A history of using food stamps. And 10. A history of negative affectivity, where the person regularly displays negative emotions, including sadness, disgust, lethargy, fear, and distress. The data came from the nationally representative U.S. Health and Retirement Study, whose participants ranged in age from 50 to 104, with an average age of 69.3. These surveys didn't capture every possible adversity. For example, neither food insecurity nor domestic abuse was addressed. However, the new findings provide an indication of where various factors stand in relation to each other. Armed with this information, we're better equipped to answer the question, if we're going to put money and effort into interventions or policy changes, how could we potentially provide the greatest return on that investment? Smoking has been understood as one of the greatest predictors of mortality for 40 years, if not more. However, little has been done to address the problems of people being routinely unemployed or the increasing prevalence of divorce. Can we shift these factors in a positive way and thereby have an impact on mortality rates? Similarly, can we target interventions for alcoholics and those with financial difficulties to reduce their risk? Whether we're talking about booking flight tickets, buying a car, or finding a new apartment, we always ask ourselves the same question. Should I strike while the iron's hot or wait until a better offer comes along? People often find it difficult to make decisions when alternatives are presented sequentially rather than simultaneously. This becomes even more difficult when time is limited and an offer that you turn down now may no longer be available later. Until now, the way we behave in such situations has never been thoroughly examined. But new research published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences involved numerous experiments designed to investigate this issue. Using the results, the researchers then developed a simple mathematical model for the strategy that people can use when they make decisions. Notably, it is easier using a computer to find the best possible process for making decisions of this type. However, the human brain is not capable of carrying out the complex calculations that are required, so humans use a rather simplified strategy. The researchers simulated purchasing situations with up to 200 participants in each test in order to find out what strategies people actually use. In one test, the participants were told to try to get a flight ticket as cheaply as possible. They were given 10 offers, one after the other, in which the price fluctuated. Meanwhile, the fictional departure date was getting nearer and nearer. In another test, people had to get the best possible deal on products such as groceries or kitchen appliances with the fluctuating prices taken from an online shop. The evaluation of the experiments confirmed that the test's participants did not use the optimal yet complex strategy calculated by the computer. Instead, they used a linear threshold model. The price that I'm prepared to pay increases every day by the same amount. That means the further along I am in the process, the higher the price I am willing to accept. This principle can be applied not only to purchasing decisions, but also situations such as a choice of an employer or a life partner. At the beginning, perhaps my standards are high, but over time they may lower, so that in the end I may settle for someone I would have rejected in the beginning. The researchers analyzed the experimental data and developed a mathematical model that describes human behavior in various scenarios. That helps people to better understand decision-making. The model also allows people to predict the circumstances in which we tend to buy a product too early, or when we delay too long and then have to take whatever is left in the end. The researchers think these findings could help people make difficult decisions. In the current digital world, the amount of information available for decision-making can be overwhelming. This research provides a starting point for a better understanding of when people succeed or fail in such tasks. That could enable people to structure decision-making problems, for example in online shopping, in such a way that people are supported in navigating the flood of data. Recently, at the ACM Conference on Human Factors in Computing Systems 2020, Researchers at the University of Helsinki explained a technique they have developed using artificial intelligence to analyze opinions and draw conclusions using the brain activity of groups of people. This technique, which the researchers call brain sourcing, can be used to classify images or recommend content, something that has not been demonstrated before. The University of Helsinki researchers experimented with the possibility of analyzing people's electroencephalograms, or EEGs, with the help of AI techniques. Why? They wanted to investigate whether collecting people's reaction to images could be applied to image recognition by utilizing the natural reactions of people without them having to carry out any manual tasks with a keyboard or mouse. And then, rather than beginning to train an AI system by asking for people's interpretation of data, this information could be read directly from their EEGs. In the study, a total of 30 volunteers were shown images of human faces on a computer display. The participants were instructed to label the faces in their mind based on what was portrayed in the images. For example, whether an image portrayed a blonde or dark-haired individual, or a person smiling or not smiling. Unlike in conventional crowdsourced data collection, the volunteers did not provide any additional information using the mouse or keyboard. They simply observed the images presented to them. Meanwhile, the brain activity of each participant was collected using electroencephalography. From the EEGs, the AI algorithm learned to recognize images relevant to the task, such as when an image of a blonde person appeared on screen. In the results of the experiment, the computer was able to interpret these mental labels directly from the EEG. The researchers concluded that brain sourcing could be applied to simple and well-defined recognition tasks by comparing the EEG results with highly reliable labeling results, which were already achieved using data collected from 12 volunteers. Beyond simply training AI systems, the findings can be utilized to improve various interfaces that combine brain and computer activity. These interfaces would require the availability of lightweight and user-friendly EEG equipment in the form of wearable electronics. Such lightweight wearables are actively being developed and may be available sometime in the near future. As brain imaging technologies improve, it should become possible to capture preference information directly from the brain. So instead of using conventional buttons, individuals could simply listen to a song or watch a show, and their brain activity alone would be enough to determine their response to it. As recently reported in the IEEE Internet of Things Journal, researchers at RMIT identified several key variables likely to drive concentration and comfort levels in work environments, and then set about measuring these variables with sensors. The engineers and psychologists worked with global design and engineering firm Arup to develop and test their new AI-driven system on 31 staff in two of the company's activity-based working offices over 4 weeks. Data was collected on noise levels, as well as indoor temperature and air quality, humidity, air pressure, and even electromagnetic fields. They used that information, along with survey data, to train machine learning algorithms that could identify patterns in perceived concentration and activity, and then provide solutions for making these spaces work best for people. Data showed different people concentrated better in different zones. Many people had a favorite spot, such as near the window, kitchen, or their manager, and found concentrating more difficult if they weren't able to sit there. They were also more sensitive to the office temperature not being exactly right if they missed out on their favorite seat. Regardless of where they sat, office temperature was a major factor in how comfortable and focused people were. Most found temperatures below 72.5 degrees Fahrenheit too cold to fully concentrate, and as the day progressed, it was observed that people became increasingly sensitive to this. Notably, high CO2 levels, due to high occupant densities, were also a barrier in people's ability to concentrate. The results for CO2 and thermal comfort underline just how important a high-quality heating, cooling, and ventilation system is in office design, as well as indoor plants to reduce CO2. A major influence on perceived concentration in the mornings, unsurprisingly, was sleep quality the night before. The number of formal and informal meetings was also shown to have a large impact on perceived concentration, with those who had 5 formal meetings in a day reporting lower concentration levels compared with those who had fewer. Informal meetings, run-ins encouraged by activity-based working, were also measured. While they were preferred by some workers and could be used to reduce the number of formal meetings, they were seen as another source of distraction for others. The researchers see this type of system as having the potential to eventually be used to enable informed decision-making regarding workplace design and layout, or even to suggest to people when to take breaks, what zone might suit them best, and so on. Arup engineer and project partner, Shaw Kudo, said beyond the useful insights on their own office, they also saw it as an opportunity to help the wider property industry. Modern offices, new and existing, are likely to undergo change and potentially redesign workplaces post-COVID-19, he said. The valuable findings from this work can feed into future designs and allow Arup to better service our clients as they plan their future workplace, whether this is a new build or a return to the office after COVID-19. Fellow Arup engineer Tim Rawling said they were also looking to adapt the work to assessing the impact of working from home on people's work experience given variability in spaces. Given the changing landscape of work environments, we're excited by the opportunity to explore application of this research to new working environments and flexible working arrangements, he said. The researchers concluded that technological developments and the proliferation of pervasive sensing technologies had opened up many opportunities to collect data from various sensors and smart devices, which could be used to optimize work environments.